Welcome to the InnovaBus podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't yet joined our wonderful Flywheel Nation community, go to flywheelnation.com and join in the podcast conversations. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Marketing is about 80% education. You're educating people on what their problem is. You're educating on people on how to reach their goal faster. You're educating them as to their solution to getting it done faster or solving the problem. And then you're also educating them as to the fact that you are the best solution for them. And then even after they buy, you're educating them on how to be successful with what they purchased, which is what makes email marketing so important. Email marketing, by far, above Facebook, above TikTok, above anything else, email marketing is still the number one way that small businesses get new customers or generate additional income from their existing client base.
Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited today to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast from Orlando, Florida in the USA, Ty Goodwin, who's an award-winning instructional designer, it's hard to say, an author, a speaker, a marketing strategist, and she's also CEO of that marketing team. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Ty. It's a real privilege to have you here as my guest.
Yeah, I'm excited for this conversation.
Me too. Now, your background, you've got an interesting background. You're a former teacher that turned entrepreneur at some stage of your teaching career, and then you basically developed 20 years of experience in online marketing. So I'm really looking forward to digging into that, because you would have jumped into online marketing in the very early days and you would have seen a lot of things happen in that time. Yeah. It's been an exciting time in that area. So looking forward to digging into all of that with you today and exploring that. But before we do that, what's the impact you hope to make in the world today, Ty?
You know, earlier this year, I decided that I wanted to see more of what I wanted in the world. And so I started spending my intention on helping coaches, healers, and spiritual entrepreneurs, people who were making an impact and change, helping them be more visible in the world so they could reach more people. So kind of like a ripple effect, I help them be more visible, then they're able to go and help more people.
Yeah, I love that. That's one of the things we talk about quite a bit in what we do with podcasting is increasing people's visibility so they can help more people. And it's interesting, is it the Kevin Costner film, where he builds the baseball field out in the middle of nowhere and says, you know, build it and they will come? And that's kind of how people have seen this whole internet marketing, right? But it's not quite like that.
Not at all.
All right. So let's start with, you've got 20 years of experience. What are some of the big changes you've seen in that 20 years in digital marketing, and how are they impacting business today?
When you were reading that, it reminded me that I came on right when Facebook was really getting started. And one of the biggest changes, you know, I think is that, I don't know if you remember this, but remember when Facebook business pages were everything? And it was like free marketing, and people were so excited. And in a minute, they changed it and made it to where your business page is not the thing that most people see. And people got really mad that now you have to pay for advertising, as if advertising was always free. I'm like, where in where yeah. in anywhere was advertising free. You know, companies paid big money and had huge marketing departments because of that. And so it's been interesting to watch people get really excited about this opportunity to get free marketing via social media, not realizing that marketing for the bulk of people has never been something that was free. And people, you know, adapt to changing. And then, you know, now people are using ads and people are more accustomed to ads, and then the cost of ads go up. So that's been really interesting to watch. And one of the things that I've said is that the internet has made it very accessible for people to start businesses. And it made the barrier of entry really low. But what that means now is that the barrier of success, especially when it comes to things like online marketing, is super high, because anybody and everybody can create a Facebook, you know, page, create a picture, have a photo shoot, and say they're an entrepreneur. And they're really not entrepreneurs. They really haven't done much in the marketing world or even in the business world, but people can give that appearance. And so watching that transform, I guess, over the years has been big. And I think another really big one has been the rise and crash of influence marketing. You know, where, you know, it used to be that you actually had to have some substance and some character and some skin in the game. And now, you know, you can have one or two viral videos and you can be deemed as this influencer, an expert. And it's not really, you know, so there's really like no meat to it. And I think that's been really hard for a lot of people who their first language is not marketing, but they want to be visible online. But they don't know how to become influencers, and they don't really even want to become influencers, but they have no choice in this market but to learn how to become more visible so that they can reach their audience.
Yeah, I remember the very early days of the Facebook business pages, and I think when they started charging for advertising, you could actually run advertisements, and they had all their analytics up pretty early on, and it was like pennies for 100 clicks or 1,000 clicks through. It was very cheap advertising, and it was easy to reach an audience if you defined it well, whereas now it's actually really difficult to kind of reach the right audience and matching. And often I hear people saying, well, my Facebook ad campaign's not working. And I say, well, let's have a look at the target audience, which is usually where the thing breaks down, because they're paying a lot of money, but they're advertising in front of people that are not interested or not a good fit for whatever reason.
Yeah, well, you know, the other thing I think is interesting is they don't realize who they're competing with, you know, especially in like the coaching space or the internet marketing space. You know, I would see people say all the time, well, you know, I only want to spend, you know, $100 a month. And I'm like, okay, so you're now competing, right, with people that are spending $10,000 a day on Facebook ads, and then you're complaining that your ads are not working. And it's not that your ad isn't working. And sometimes it's not even that they don't have the right target audience. They don't have enough money, right? You can't, if you're only committed to spending even sometimes, you know, that $30, $50, $100 a day that used to work for people, when you're now competing with people that are spending $500 to $1,000 a day, you're going to be the lowest person on the totem pole. And so you're not going to be seeing the people that are more likely to click. And that's just the name of the game. That's just how marketing has always worked. But because a lot of people were never really educated on how marketing and advertising works, they think that the things that they've been seeing are the standards, when what we've really been experiencing is an anomaly with online marketing, because it was so new and we had so many people trying to figure things out. But now that it's become the standard go-to, it's leveling and normalizing, and it's reverting back to just like what we saw in other, in other marketing spaces like TV ads, right? You know, think about the first Super Bowl ads. They weren't paying millions of dollars for 1 minute, right? So it's that kind of thing that we're seeing.
That's right. Yeah. And it's, I mean, the TV one is a really interesting comparison, because it's probably something people understand more easily. If you think of, you could spend, I don't know, it's probably billions actually now for a minute or so of 15 seconds on the Super Bowl or some high audience event like that. And you can also spend maybe several thousand dollars to go on some regional TV station that might be seen by a few hundred people in a small country town. So that's kind of the comparison, isn't it? Who you're competing against.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I know I was fascinated. You talk about funnels, and funnels is something that I'm kind of, I've got really mixed feelings about this idea of funnels and all these people talking about hacking funnels and so on. And I think that a lot of the language tends to forget that we're dealing with people and it's about taking customers on a journey. But I noted that you actually also talk about customer journey and staying human on that. Linking it back to advertising, you know, a lot of people advertise and think, I'm going to advertise my product, or even worse, I'm going to advertise my $50,000 or $100,000 high ticket item, and people that see me for the very first time are going to see that advertisement, be convinced straight away to spend that money. No, that's not what's going to happen. So talk to us a little bit about how important is it to have that funnel, that customer journey in place? What should that look like from the advertisement? And what are some of the tips that you have?
You know, well, I'm with you, Jerry, and I think it really is about the customer journey. And we use the word funnel because that's the tool, right, that people have been using. When I would start talking about funnels with people, I would say, listen, your funnel, it's tool agnostic, and it really is the journey. It's how you get people to go from I'm interested to I'm in, right, as in I'm going to be invested in working with you. And, you know, what people forget is that nobody gets married on the first date. Okay, maybe some people do, right? But most of us don't meet a person and say, hey, you know, you look okay. We had some laughs, let's get married. And that's it. And they're together forever. And we think that's going to happen with marketing, right? You see my ad, my reel, my video, my Facebook post for the first time, and automatically, of course, you're going to say yes and say you want to invest everything that you've got, right, to work with me. And it doesn't work that way. You have to court or woo, or we like to say that marketing is a lot like dating, right? You know, you go to the places where the people are that you're interested in dating. You don't just hang out in random places, right? And then you get to know them. You exchange numbers. You share stories. You see them in different circumstances. And that's what your nurturing is, which is what makes email marketing so important. Email marketing, by far, above Facebook, above TikTok, above anything else, email marketing is still the number one way that small businesses get new customers or generate additional income from their existing client base. You know, the number has gone up and down over the last couple of years, but it's still around $40 to $42 is the return on the investment for every $1 you spend on email marketing is what you can expect.
Wow. And so when you, that high, yeah.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And when you think about that, it makes sense because it's about that nurturing. It's about nurturing the relationship. Mm. It's about educating people. And that's my background is as a teacher, right? You mentioned that in the beginning. Yeah. And one of the things I was quickly able to identify was that marketing is about 80% education, right? You're educating people on what their problem is. You're educating on people on how to reach their goal faster. You're educating them as to their solution to getting it done faster or solving the problem. And then you're also educating them as to the fact that you are the best solution for them. And then even after they buy, you're educating them on how to be successful with what they purchased, right?
Yeah, there's so much to love in that. I mean, I know email marketing, and I'll have a follow-up question about this in a moment, but remind me if I forget. Email marketing is so valuable, and people kind of think it's so, well, 20 years ago, and it is, but it still works. It's still one of the big keys. Now, I didn't know it was a 42-to-1 ratio. That's quite stunning. Yeah. And the other thing I love about that is marketing is education and teaching people about their problem. First of all, bringing to their awareness that, hey, you might have a problem. If you're in this space, if you're doing these things, are you aware that there's a risk of this thing happening, or are you looking for a solution to being more visible, getting more clients, which is what we're talking about. And then, okay, here's some approaches to do that. And also educating them. And I like how you said educating them that you might be the best provider for the solution, or you might have the best solution. I like to think it's actually a little bit more than that. In fact, it's educating, here's how we do it. Mm. Here's how we approach it.
Yeah.
And if you don't like that, we're not for you. You're better off going somewhere else. Yeah. But if you do like that approach, and if you are convinced that we're competent and everything else, then we might be a good match. So there's all that. Email marketing, one of the things that I'm finding really frustrating of late is my email is just so full of a lot of junk. And some of that is people have taken to use some of the big webinar platforms to just bombard everything. Now, I don't know how they get a hold of my email because I've never signed up for anything there. But I can't unsubscribe because I would be unsubscribing from that webinar provider, and then I wouldn't get webinar notifications from the ones that I do want to participate in. Now, a couple of them actually let you report back as spam a webinar invitation to the webinar provider. But I haven't noticed that that helps a lot. So that's one trend I'm seeing. I'm also seeing an increase. So people are obviously taking on board the advice that email marketing is a good thing, but they're doing it in a way that just buy a list and bombard people with stuff that isn't relevant to them, which to me is a fantastic way to really annoy a whole bunch of people and get yourself blacklisted.
Yeah.
The challenge, of course, then, if you're a genuine business owner and you've got genuine value to add to a certain audience and you're using email marketing to reach that audience, the challenge is you're going to land in that inbox, like my inbox, amongst probably 100 times that volume of junk. How do you stand out?
Oh, you know, that's great. Well, you know, I think one of the ways you do stand out is by being consistent. And listen, let me give you, you know, hip some folks to the psychology of this internet marketing and this email marketing specifically. You know, when we send lots of emails, like I, you know, depending on which segment of my email list you're in, which is another thing, is how you stand out. You segment your audience so that you are only sending the right content to the right people at the right time. But, you know, depending on which segment you are on my list, you might get an email every day. And I know full well that you're not going to open every single email. But what I also know is that guess whose name you're going to keep seeing in your inbox? And that's all we really want, is to be seen, right? We want that visibility. And so once we recognize that, you know, it becomes okay with realizing that there's a lot of stuff happening in people's inboxes. But if you're consistent, if you are speaking to their pain points, if you're focusing on what people like to call your audience of one, right? Like making it really specific to who you want to target. And this is why it's so important to know your audience. It's not just about, oh, I know psychographics and demographics and, you know, my audience are women over 40 who want to lose weight. That's almost every woman over 40, right? Trying to do that. But now, if you told me, you know, I really want to talk to women who are over 40, who have a history of diabetes in their families, and they're really concerned about being put on medication for diabetes, or they're pre-diabetic. Now you've got the attention, right, of those people who need exactly what you're looking for. And it's not just like a nice to have, and maybe I'll lose weight, because no, that's not who you're going to serve. That's not whose attention you're going to get. So it comes down to really knowing who your audience is, making sure that your messaging and your content is really, really dialed in and intentional, segmenting your audience, which is one of the reasons why we love using quizzes, because it allows you to capture more data than just an email address. Because honestly, listen, if all you've got is someone's email address, you don't know much about them. So how do you really segment and make sure you're getting them the right content and the right offers? And what you're usually doing is just putting everybody in what we call gen pop, right? General population. Everybody gets all the same emails. And that's the quickest way to make sure you're getting no return on your email marketing, and that you're probably annoying people by sending them things that they really don't want to hear about. And I'll use the example of the whole weight loss thing again, because I have a lot of clients who are in that health coaching space, and I always use this example. The way you talk about weight loss to a new mom who's just got a new baby at home is very different than the way you talk to weight loss to a woman who's over 50 going through menopause. and has discretionary income and little time. But if you send them the same email, imagine being a 20-something mom, 20-something-year-old mom, and you're getting something that talks about menopause and hormones.
Yeah.
Right? And imagine being a 50-year-old woman who's, you know, going through that change in life, and now you're getting emails about, hey, drop those 20 baby pounds. Like, it's not, it's not going to work. And so you want to stand out, dial into who your audience is, know what they need, know what turns them off, get really, really focused about that. Make sure your messaging aligns to that. Have really, really good content, not just salesy stuff, but things that are going to help them see value in what you do, things that are going to answer questions for them and help them overcome objections, and things that are going to want to make them open it because it's so interesting. It's like a good story, and really be consistent about it. And that's how you weather the storm of the tornado of emails that people get. And I want to add one more thing, Jürgen, because I think we forget about this. We're nosy entrepreneurs. We subscribe to everything. But most of our clients aren't subscribing to like 50 billion newsletters. So we're biased because we see good all the crap that comes in. But most of our clients aren't like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Although I do make it a point every day to unsubscribe from as much as I can. That's what first thing I do when I have my email session is, what can I unsubscribe from? That's my very first question.
That's a good habit.
But you're right. I think you raised a number of really good points there. Segmenting the list is so valuable. Being really clear about who you're speaking to. I mean, we emphasize this so much in our podcasting. We say, who's your listener? Who's your ideal dream listener? And that's the person you talk to. And so the email marketing is exactly the same principle, isn't it? And that example of the weight loss is such a insightful one, because everybody's kind of at various points of their lives saying, oh, I need to lose a little bit of weight. But it's so different, isn't it, from who you are? I mean, even gender is so different. Like, I'm at a stage of my life where I'm actually looking to gain weight, but I'm looking to gain muscle mass. And that's different to somebody who's in their middle age. And as you point out, with women in different life stages, there's so much different, right?
Yeah.
The other thing that I think is really important in what you said is providing value. Providing value, that's a match to the need of who you're speaking to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really important. And a lot of folks have a hard time, you know, writing content. And let's be honest, you know, content creation, even I don't care how much you use ChatGPT, like, it's a wonderful tool and assistant, but there's still an art and science to writing good copy and copy that converts, and knowing how to really create messaging and tell good stories. So that doesn't go away just because you've got some assistance going on, right? And a lot of people don't realize that, and they really forget that there's a reason companies have entire marketing departments, right? Like, they pay hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars every year for entire marketing staffs and copywriters. And so when you sit down and think that you've never had any marketing training, you've never taken a sales course, and you're going to sit down and write the most amazing emails ever, and you're going to do it in 5 minutes because that's all you got time for today, it's a little unrealistic. And it's such a huge part of growing your business is understanding how to communicate and connect. We teach our clients about how to create content and messaging that does three things. It has to attract, it has to repel, and it has to sell, right? When you learn how to do those three things with your content, it's great, but it's a learned skill set. And you learn it, but you have to be diligent and practice. I always say practice makes profit, right? So you have to practice, you have to learn, you have to sharpen that skill set in order to get consistent results.
Yeah. And consistency is something that's really important. Coming back to what you said earlier about emails is being consistent there in terms of the value you provide and showing up in people's inboxes.
Yeah.
I love that you brought up ChatGPT there. And I think it is an amazing tool. I'm astounded every day at what you can do with it. But it is a two-edged sword. And for those that don't bring along some core skill that they're trying to do and that they get ChatGPT to help with, there's two things. First of all, you're missing the core skill, so you don't have the check and balance, and you don't have the ability then to add your own personality and your own unique spin. And the second thing is you probably don't have the skills to ask the right questions to get good answers from ChatGPT. So that, I'd add to that, you know, and I'm a huge fan of ChatGPT. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
But I will say that. You mentioned earlier about quizzes and using quizzes to get more information. Talk to us a little bit more about how you use quizzes, because one of the things that getting people on your email list is basically you offer them something in return for them giving you their email, and then you can start sending them that regular email that we've been talking about. And quizzes is one of the popular tools you use. Talk to us a little bit about why quizzes. You've already mentioned that you can get more information, but there might be more, I suspect.
Well, yeah, there's a few other reasons, you know, why we use quizzes. I mean, my personal story of using a quiz when I left my last day job, which is going on 7 years now, was that I didn't have an email list. I had an old subscriber list that was about 2.5 years old, so they hadn't heard from me in 2.5 years. And when I knew I needed to start my business, because I literally walked away from my last day job, didn't have a backup plan, I didn't have a resume, I didn't have anything. And I sent out an email to those 2,500 people that hadn't talked to me in 2.5 years. And I said, hey, I've got this quiz. And within 10 days, I had 500 people back on my email list. And that's how, that's what I used to grow my business. And so when I saw that, I'm like, my wheels started clicking. And I said, well, what if I just got this in front of more people? And so then we started using quizzes and ads. And within 4 months, I added 9,000 people to my email list. Yeah.
That's impressive. Yeah.
And so I realized the power of it. And I didn't go broke on ads. I spent about $600 a month, right, to get those folks. And I watched my business grow from, I was struggling to make $5,000 a month, and then I was hitting $10,000 a month. And then every month was a $10,000 or $20,000 a month because I had a repeatable system for generating leads. And the great thing about using a quiz was yeah, you know, it's catchy, right? And people like taking quizzes because we're all a little bit narcissistic, right? We all want to know something about ourselves and discover new things about ourselves. And when you do the quiz the right way, you know, you're also going to give them value, right, that they didn't have before, right? So, you know, one of the funny stories that I had somebody that came to me and said, well, I want to take a quiz for people to know whether they're in chronic pain or not. I'm like, really? Like, they already know whether they're in chronic pain. I don't need a quiz for that. Right. But what you may need a quiz is to help people figure out is what's the biggest source of your chronic pain. Right. Because that's what they don't know. And when you give people that answer, that insight that they never, oh, I didn't know. Oh, wow. I never thought about that before. That helps establish your authority because you've given them insight that they didn't have before. Now, they've gotten that insight. They kind of know, like, and trust you a little bit more, right? So you're building this relationship to help them through their journey. But here's the cool thing about this. Now you have more than just an email address. You know a little bit of demographic information about them. You know about some of their behaviors. For example, we had a client the quiz was about where did my O go? And it was for ladies. And it was about their libido, right? And so when women took this quiz, they were asked questions about, you know, how much sleep are you getting, right? How much water are you getting every day? Is your job stressing you out, right? Because the end of the quiz said, you know, your libido might be impacted because, hey, you're stressed out at work. Or because you started taking a new medication. But now think about this. The woman, the business owner who was a gynecologist, right? Instead of just having people have their email address, she now has clear segments of people. This group of people, they're stressed out about work. This group of people, they just started some new medication. This group of people, their nutrition is jacked up. this group of people, their relationship is really going crazy. So guess what she gets to do in her marketing now, right?
Yeah, yeah. She can talk to all the different problems.
Exactly. Mm. And so
and segment the list,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So if you said this was your issue, we're not going to talk to you about for example, if you just started a new medication, we're not going to talk to you about like stress at work. We're not going to talk to you about marital stuff. We're going to talk to you about, hey, when's the last time you talked to a real doctor about all these medications that you're taking? And here's how that could be impacting your libido. Now you've got my attention, right? Because you personalized it. And personalization is another way you cut through the noise. With all the things that are being thrown at people through social media, through TV, through family, through life, through work, think about all the things that touch us each day. When you personalize messages, even if it's just a name, even if it's just remembering something that they said or something that they clicked on and reminding them, that little bit of personalization goes a long way over somebody who is just blasting out stuff that has no connection or relevancy to who they are and how they're living.
Mm, yeah. And the other thing about that, there's so much to love about that because it's more than just, dear Ty, so I send you an email that's sent to all of my list. And you'll get one because I'm doing it this way. You'll get one that says, dear Ty, and you'll feel good about that because it's not like dear subscriber. But if I can then address specifically a problem that you're having or an issue that you're having such that you say, wow, he's talking to me. That's when you get that connection, right? And then you're going to read the rest of it. And if it's helpful information, if it's useful information, well, that's kind of in the relationship bank for me.
Yeah.
So at some point you'll say, well, you know, I'm ready to spend money on this issue, and that's the person that I'm going to spend money with because I trust them. I know that they know their stuff. They've talked to me specifically about the problem I'm having, not just generically.
Right.
So I think they can help me solve this. The other thing I'll mention is, and I'm seeing this more and more, is the advertising that I see on the social media, particularly Instagram, probably because I spend more time on Instagram than the others, is targeted very much to the things I'm interested in. And it's amazing. It amazes me. I'm actually clicking on probably about a third of the advertisements just to find out more. Rather than ignoring them, which is my default approach to ads, because the algorithm clearly has put me into some sort of segment and is serving up the advertisements that could be relevant to me.
Yeah, I'm a big person that clicks on a lot of stuff. Right. And I do it, and I'm a little bit of a junkie, but it's also because it's my profession, right? But I click on things because I do want to keep seeing ads, right, for different people and for different things. And I do want to see what people are doing. And one of the things I think, like, you know, you can, how can I say it? The algorithm works in a couple of different ways. And let's be real honest about this, right? It does happen because you click on something, right? But it also happens because you talk in your machine. Like, I don't know if you've ever like had that experience where you know, having a conversation with someone on the phone, and then the next time you go back into Instagram, what do you see? Advertisements for, you know, what you were just talking about. So it is listening, right? It is picking up all the data and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I appreciate that to some degree. But what that means is that we really have to know who our audience is. Right? You really have to know what they're talking about. So when we talk about knowing the words that your audience uses, knowing what things they watch and what things they read, that's another factor. If you're going to be doing paid advertising, right, you've got to think about those things. That's another reason why people fail with it, because in their target audience, they just want to target women who are over 50, who, you know, live in these zip codes and who make money. Well, what do they buy? What do they read? Who do they follow? What are they watching? Because those are the things that are also going to help you get in front of them. And it can't just be the demographics, but people don't like to do that level of market research. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I'm a big believer clicking on Facebook ads, because Facebook ads will tell you, there's a little button that says, why am I seeing this ad? And it will tell me you're seeing this ad because the advertiser chose to target these people. Okay, great. Guess who I'm going to target next, right?
Yeah.
So you got to take a look at it and realize that as much as we may not like it, right, it's part of the research process. And when you start to look at it that way as a level of data that you can actually use for your benefit, it for me, it makes it a little bit easier to accept the algorithm's tricks and all those kinds of things, right? Because it makes it, in some ways, it levels the playing field. It really does.
Yeah, well, there's a fabulous little tip there that I'll take on board. I hadn't realized that. Why are you seeing this? I've tended to ignore that, so I'm going to start clicking on that now and get some ideas as to who they're targeting. I think that's such an important point, and also the point of using the language that your target audience or your target client is using. And I wonder, in your quizzes, do you have open questions where people can actually write in an answer rather than clicking a multiple choice or just saying yes, no, or giving a factual response?
No, I don't. Go ahead.
Yeah, because this is something I've started doing on ChatGPT for a different application, is taking information, taking transcripts of conversations I've had with people and putting it in ChatGPT and getting ChatGPT to come back to me and analyze the language patterns and give me, and it does an amazing job of that, an absolutely amazing job. It comes back and it gives me an analysis of the language patterns and what kind of expressions that person uses a lot and so on. Yeah. And I'm sure that if you have, you know, hundreds of responses to a standard question, feeding that into ChatGPT and getting kind of some common responses would be a very easy analysis process compared to manually doing it.
Well, yeah, but here's the trick with that though. If I don't like using the open-ended pieces, because I need a way to qualify that it's actually my people first. So let's say I have 100 quiz. And, you know, I ask them a question and they're going to give me 75 different variants on what that answer is if it's open-ended. Well, now I have to go back and I only really want to find out the people who are actually qualified, because out of that 100 people that answered, 50 of them really weren't my ideal client.
Yeah. But you might need to do it in two stages, right?
Yeah, right. But if I put that in ChatGPT, it's going to give me everybody's stuff. I don't want that. So I love that idea. And I do that more with, and I'll give you a tip that I do that. You know what I do that with? when people give me testimonials, I take those testimonials and I put them in.
Oh, wow. Right? Yeah.
Because I say, like, this is feedback from my ideal client. Can you reverse engineer this and create a customer profile or avatar based on this person? Here's what I did for them. Here's what their business is. Here's what they said in the testimonial. And I've used it that way, right, to help me reverse engineer. And I have a whole class that I did for my folks on this about how to reverse engineer your ideal client, right? And you can do it that way. And so I'm very much for using that when you have conversations with people and you can get the richness of the language. But with the quiz, I want it to be more quantitative.
Yeah, it's right? A qualification up front.
Yeah, I want the quantitative data that says it was 60% of the people said this, as opposed to I got 100 different responses and I can't figure out where to
go. Yeah, yeah.
Because then it's going to make it easier for me if I can say 60% of the people said this, only 20% of the people said that. And then those 20% of the people, now I'm going to get on a call with them and I'll get that rich data, and then I would put that in ChatGPT.
Yeah. It's probably a multi-step process, but I love the idea of reverse engineering ideal client from basically the case study information and the testimonial.
Yes.
Brilliant. All right. Well, this is a fascinating time. I could go on talking marketing, email marketing, and using ChatGPT in various ways for ages, but I'm just aware of the time. So I think now's a good time to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. It's the same five questions I ask of every guest. And the idea is you'll give us some really snappy answers that'll inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result.
All right, let's
you're set.
Give you something snappy and sassy.
All right, snappy and sassy, good. What's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Oh, get some good sleep.
Get some good sleep. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was having a conversation this morning. I go on a morning bike ride every morning with a bunch of other guys, and then we have a coffee at the end of it. And I must have put them to the sword a little bit today because they didn't go to the front at all on the entire one-hour ride. And at the end they said to me, you're going to have to ride with the A-graders next time. And they asked me, what's your secret? And I said, well, one of the things I've been focused on recently is getting good sleep.
Yeah, it's amazing how your brain rewires and connects. And when you're stuck in a rut and you're having a hard time, like one of the best things you can do is just give yourself a place to rest and let your brain kind of reconnect and synthesize some things.
Yeah, great. All right, now what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Read. I love reading. I love books. I'm a teacher at heart, you know, lifelong yeah. learner. And so I get my best idea. I can always tell, you know, it is funny too. You'll always tell if you follow me on social media that my posts are the most rich when I've just read something that has just inspired me. So.
Yeah, I'll have to look into your post. Do you share the source when you're reading a book and get an inspiration from that?
Sometimes I do, but you know what it's more like? I'm more like the pressure cooker or a crock pot where like all the things go in and they kind of make a stew, and then something will connect to something else, and then we'll have this great idea, but it comes from all the collective things that are kind of in the pot. Mm.
Excellent, yeah. Yeah, and there's so much amazing information out there, isn't there? And I find that a lot too. I read one thing and then I go and read another thing or listen to something else. And hang on, suddenly two things connect. All right, what's a favorite resource you use most often?
One of my favorite resources is Canva. I love creating, and I have a people on my team and they're like, get out, like stop designing stuff. But I love it. It's so much fun. And it's a little bit of a break from the strategic thinking and the heavy reading and the kind of things that I do. And so it's a great resource for creating, you know, graphics and images quick. And I love hanging out with it.
Yeah, it's a wonderful tool, isn't it? And there's so much, I mean, there's so many connections now with ChatGPT as well. There's some really neat things you can do, particularly putting together advertisements and social media posts that give you some fantastic templates based on a data set that is proven to get people's attention. Yeah. So then it's just a case of putting in the appropriate content. Excellent. What's the best way to keep a client on track?
Oh, the best way to keep a client on track is making sure you have consistent communication. And we work really, really hard with this, you know. For example, when we do these calls with our clients, you know, we'll have something to fill out for us. If we don't hear from them in the first 3 days, we're going to send them a message. And we're making sure we've got the best way to contact them. And so over communication is the thing that's been working best when it comes to keeping clients on track.
Yeah, excellent. And yeah, I like that you said over communication. Sometimes, and I fall into this trap all the time, there's sort of nothing to report, so I don't report anything. Whereas I have to keep reminding myself it's much better to go back and say everything's on track, there's nothing sort of to actually report, but just wanted to touch base and make sure that everything's okay at your end, and that opens the opportunity for a conversation if there needs to be one. If not, it's all good.
Yeah.
At least you've touched base, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, and what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Speak your truth. You know, there's so many times when, and this is for a lot of the clients that I work with, so this may be just with my subset, but, you know, we're looking for people to like our stuff. We're looking for people to co-sign or validate our stuff. And so we don't want to be canceled. You know, we want everybody to like us. And the reality is that one of the best ways to differentiate yourself in a crowded market is to speak your story and your truth and let people find you that resonate with you. Don't be afraid of what they're going to say. You know, welcome the people that want to challenge what you have to say. Welcome those conversations, because in it, it's learning. It's nothing to take personal. Mm-hmm. Somebody doesn't agree with you. I am not for everybody, right? Everybody is not for me. I'm the mixture of the woo-woo with the tech and strategy all combined into one thing. Some people don't rock with that, and it is totally okay. And so you want to stand out. You want to differentiate yourself. Really be authentically who you are and speak it and live it and breathe it. And that's going to make you stand out, especially in a world where everybody is trying to be cookie cutter.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really important point that you made there. Being comfortable with not everybody's going to like me, or I'm not going to be for everybody. Coming back to what you were saying earlier about being really clear about who your target audience is, who your ideal client is, and anything we do should actually be focused on them, but staying true to yourself. So I think that idea of being really comfortable with, okay, some people are not going to like me, and that's perfectly okay because they're not a good match for me. They're better suited going to somebody who rocks differently.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thanks, Ty. This has been absolutely fabulous. Now, where can people reach out to say thanks for what you've shared today and maybe even find out more about all the work you're doing and get a hold of whatever quiz you're running right now? Yeah. Jump on that.
Well, great question. Well, I'm always open to connecting with people on social media. So you can find me on Facebook, on Instagram under Ty Goodwin, even on LinkedIn. I hang out there as well. TAIGOODWIN. And then you can find out more about the quiz stuff that we're doing at quizandgrowrich.com.
Excellent. And of course, we'll have the links in the show notes for people to click straight through. So as we wrap it up, what action would you like our listener to take from our conversation today, Ty?
Oh, man, we talked about so many things. I think the biggest thing that I would hope people take away is the importance of being consistent with whatever you do. So whether you're going to do email marketing, whether you're going to build a quiz, whether you're going to be on different social media platforms, your ChatGPT, whatever it is that you're doing, be consistent.
Yes, that's a great call to action, the consistency. And part of that is focusing, sort of setting aside the distractions, mm-hmm. deciding, okay, I'm going to do email marketing, or I'm going to run quizzes as a lead magnet. Well, focus on that. Focus on just being consistent with that. And that doesn't mean that you have to send an email every day or every week. It might be once a month, but just be consistent, because that's what people come to expect after a certain amount of time. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today, Ty. This has been immensely enjoyable for me, and I've learned quite a lot. There's a couple of tips that I'm going to have to come back and listen to the recording and make a note of and see what I can do with those that you've shared today. And I'm sure there's many more that our listeners will take away as well, but that call to action at the end about consistency is probably the most important one. So thanks a lot, and please do stay in touch.
Thank you. It's been an amazing conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening. We'd love you to leave a review on this episode. It will help us to make the podcast better for you. Simply go to lovethepodcast.com/InnovaBuzz and pick your preferred platform. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/flywheel and secure your membership to the exclusive Flywheel Nation community, where you'll enjoy direct access to our incredible podcast guests, engaging meaningful conversations, and participate in connection events designed to elevate your business journey. Don't miss out. Join Flywheel Nation today. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.